Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a fantastic Mother's Day weekend. Hope your week is getting off to a great start as well. And it was a good weekend, fellas. We got outside a little bit. Weather's good. It's feeling like summer. The sun is up nice and early. It's warm right away. It's a good time of year to be in Southern California.
It's interesting because the traffic was a little thicker. And I know it was Mother's Day, but there was, you know, when I went down and hung out, social distancing, we were spaced out at the park, but you could see families were gathered, you know, but at the same time, traffic was a little thicker. You could feel that people was like, yeah, okay, I feel a little bit better. It's almost like sticking your toe in the water, you know, it goes, let me stick my toe in the water. Okay. All right, let me stick my other toe in the water. Okay. I'm going to put the whole foot in there. Yeah, let me put the other foot in there. Okay. So you can start to see and feel that people was getting a little comfortable. I just hope that we kind of, you know, follow everything in terms of the social distancing and what the health people are saying.
I went down to the harbor in Dana Point. There's a fish market down there that we go to pick up some stuff every once in a while. And there were people everywhere sitting around having picnics on the benches, eating pizzas, just like nothing had ever happened. They were out of, they did not dip a toe into the water. They were going cannonballs right into the water.
Yeah, I mean, in Arizona, I basically have been just staying quarantined. I run out for store runs and come back. I did run into Tom Chambers, I told you guys. Found out he lives kind of in my neighborhood, which is really cool. Big fan of his back in the day because his hops were ridiculous. But the thing that was funny, for me anyway, was that even though he was like, he's 60-some years old now, I instantly started to size him up and try to figure out if I could take him to the bucket. And I decided by the end of our conversation, yeah, I was good. I could get some buckets on him. He might post me up because he's still 6'9", but I could tell by the way he was walking. I was like, yeah, I got this. I get some buckets on Tom Chambers.
Yeah, no, you don't. He went to Tom Chambers, played in the NBA 15 years.
Yes. Like but Travis, this is my delusion. I can't stop it. I cannot stop looking at, especially guys who play basketball, like going, yeah, I could probably get a couple buckets on him.
Nah, key straighten him out. No, not a chance that you're getting buckets on Tom Chambers or anybody else. I'm
at 60
or not.
No. Yeah, he might be able to do something because he can't move the same.
He couldn't move, dog. I'm telling you.
But you ought to be ashamed of yourself to try to take advantage of a dude that's 60. You know, Key.
I couldn't help it, Key. Right. Key, I couldn't help it. I looked. I was like, yeah, I'm going to take him on the
left side.
You're
not far behind him in age. I get it, but still.
Listen. I'm over a decade behind him in age. You calm down with that slight shade. I heard that.
It wasn't slight at all.
No, it wasn't. I'm just saying, you're trying to take advantage of a dude that's 60. If Tom Chambers was 45 and whatever, you was in your 30s and you felt like, oh, I could take it, then I would say the same thing. I would be like, nah, you ain't, please. But clearly, he's walking a certain type of way because he's broken down. You're looking for an NBA dude broken down, talking about I can still take him.
I'm going to get some work in. I'm going to put in some work.
When was the last time Tom Chambers put the ball on the ground and drove to the hoop?
I don't know, but the way he was walking, if he had tried it yesterday, it wouldn't have ended up well for him. Raj, put up a poll. Am I good with two buckets against Tom Chambers? Yes or no?
No. I'd like to be the first one to vote, and I'm going to keep hitting no over and over and over
now
again.
I'm telling you, Travis, I saw him lead it on the right. I could take him left. I could tell you. He's facing that left way.
At 60, though, Travis, at 60, I think, in all honesty, I think LZ could get a bucket of two, three, maybe five on him.
What is Tom? Is Tom Chambers, what, 6'6", 6'7", something like that?
No,
he's 6'9".
LZ told me, if LZ said right now he can get a bucket on Michael Jordan, then I'm betting the house on MJ right now. The house. I'm giving it all. I'm pushing it all to. That's different.
Real talk. So he's sitting in a chair, and I'm like, Yeah, I still can't get MJ for a bucket. No, because I did think about it. I was like,
man, please, man. Yeah, Michael Jordan to tear you up right now.
Tom, 60-year-old Tom Chambers would tear you up, too. I don't care if he's now, in his rocking chair
Tom,
or whatever.
I don't know if Tom Chambers. See, I got to see Tom Chambers.
Tom Chambers could go when he was no, he was playing. He was good.
No, of course. I'm saying right now at 60, I need to see him. See, I see Mike. Mike put on some weight, obviously, you know, he just chilling. But he ain't really chilling, see, because I know that he's still running up and down the court at times with his team. He's in the gym at times, shooting the rock still. I don't know if Tom Chambers is doing that.
Yeah, I saw MJ in Chicago for All-Star Weekend. I ain't getting nothing on him still. I'm gonna need another 15 to 20 years before I start talking smack.
All right, so let's stick with Michael here for a second. The decision to walk away from the NBA after winning three titles in a row to go play baseball, you know, it's funny because we know that he comes back. We know that he won three more after that. We all know the story, but can you guys remember what it was like and what feelings you had when you first found out that Michael Jordan was deciding, you know what, I'm going to retire from the NBA?
Oh, God.
Just was like, damn. I mean, I just was like, damn, I felt that he would come back, just didn't know when. Most athletes at the prime of their careers walk away, they tend to come back. And you certainly have sensitivity toward why he decided to leave. At least I do. I understand the pressure. Like Stephen A. talked about it, man. You know, I've been in it, not to the degree. If Michael was in it at 100% with the pressure and the stress, I've been there 75%. Where at the end of the day, you know, people say to themselves, why you stop playing after your 11th season? You could have still kept. Yeah, I could have, but I didn't want to do it anymore. I got tired. It just one of those deals where you say to yourself, man, I've done it. I'm tired of people digging in my trash can, trying to find info, trying to do this, trying to do that. I'm just tired of the grind. I'm tired of feeling unappreciated in certain situations. And you certainly understand that when you look at why he decided to step away and go play baseball, because he went through his situations with his father. He also went through all of the allegations about his gambling, which and I still maintain this to this day. Had nothing to do with his father's death. I understand all the narratives and all the people trying to put it out there. The commissioner, the late commissioner, David Stern, said, I did not know. And it was almost laughable. Everybody is laughing at the fact that people are putting that out there. And I know how the media sometimes jump to stories and people start trying to do things. Like Michael said, well, you can't chop me down this way, so you're going to try to chop me down another way. I tell you what, I'm going to go do something else for a little bit. Had he not had a baseball strike, had not been coming up, I seriously think he would have still been playing baseball and not going back to play basketball. Now, at this point, I have nothing else to do. What am I can't go? Am I going to go sign with the Chicago Bears and try to play wide receiver? You know, it's like, what am I going to do next?
Goalie for the Blackhawks might have been an option.
Oh, what am I going to do next, right? At the end of the day, he's talking to B.J. Armstrong. B.J. like, man, just come. The guys want to see you. When you walk into that building, you start getting that. You looking at him. You going, man, okay. I can really. Let me see that rock, man, okay. Ooh, yeah, ooh, this feel good. Like I've been there before. When I retired in football and Bill Parcells told me, hey, man, why don't you come down to Miami and come watch our practice? I start looking. The first thing now, all of a sudden, call Darrell. Hey, man, why don't you come talk to me in the office? I go up to call Darrell's office after practice, and we just talking. This is 9 months after being removed from football. And I'm sitting there going, you know, man, and they want to talk X and O's and how am I feeling. And so you start to feel like, man, I had to get out of the building. I had to get out of there. That was a mistake to go watch the practice.
Before you made a bad decision.
A bad decision. Because I'm looking at it, and I'm saying to myself, oh, I kill these dudes. These dudes. I'm telling them. I'm like, man, y'all got some bums at receiver. You got Ted Ginn. He's scary as all outdoors. The first thing he do, run out of bounds. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking at this. And I'm saying to myself, oh, yeah, I'll go eat right now. But at the same time, I'm looking at myself and I'm saying, this ESPN gig behind this desk sure is nice.
Nobody's hitting you.
Nobody's hitting me, and I'm good. So I certainly understand. I could side with that.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember the decision. Or I don't even say the decision, the announcement that Michael was going to walk away from the NBA. And I remember thinking to myself, yeah, right. There's not a chance. Michael Jordan is not leaving on the heels of three consecutive championships. And then when we found out that it was real, we found out that he was going to go play baseball, it never once occurred to me that he wasn't coming back to the NBA at some point. You just knew it. I didn't know if it was a year or 2 years or however long it was going to take, but there was never a moment in my mind where I thought that Michael Jordan was done playing NBA basketball, not for 1 second.
You know, it's so weird. I remember the day very, very well because I was in college. We were always playing ball at the university's gym facility. And me and all my boys, we just rolled up to the gym and we just talked like for hours about Mike. Like normally you go up there and you play ball like for hours and hours. You go, you play ball for like 6 hours, you go get a bite to eat, you come back and you keep playing ball. That's what your body was like back, you know, late teens, early 20s. But this day in 93, I was a junior. We just talked, man, about the games, what Mike meant to the culture, though we didn't have that phraseology, but this was also the height of Spike Lee, so we're in that kind of mindset. It was incredible, man. It was absolutely incredible. And it didn't.
Did you think he was coming back, LZ? Did it ever occur to you that he wasn't coming back?
I was just going to say, at that time, I didn't think he was coming back because I hadn't really known anybody to say I retire and then come back. I hadn't really paid attention like that to remember anyone who had done that before. So to me, it's like once you say you retire, that was it. And remember, this is also in the heels of Magic saying, this is it, I'm out. So it was like, dang. Like, he was like a pop, like, two-piece blow right there in terms of your icons in this sport saying goodbye. So, no, I didn't think Michael was coming back because Magic wasn't coming back as far as I was concerned. Retirement meant goodbye.
I knew that he was coming back for two reasons. One, he had a lot of basketball left. And two, I saw him swing a bat. That was not going to happen either. So we will get into that next. Michael Jordan's career as a professional baseball player. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, we're going to get into Michael Jordan's minor league baseball career. But when I heard that this guy is on the line, we had to do this. The Sprint People's Hotline, Primo in L.A. Primo, you're on The Morning Show. What's up? Where you been?
What's up, man? I've been trying to make it, trying to get through the pandemic, and I think more than hurting people's health, I think it's hurting their brain cells because people are acting crazy, man. But look, I want to say this. I'm watching the whole thing because I remember the whole thing, the Bulls dynasty, the greatness of Scottie Pippen. For a while there, Scottie Pippen was the second greatest player on earth. He was better than Michael defensively. Let me say that. But he didn't get no credit. He didn't get the right salary. And you know, people, because of their characteristics and personalities, they act certain ways. You know, MJ wasn't perfect. Kobe wasn't perfect, and he's my favorite guy. But I let Scotty go because they dogged him out. But I want to say one thing, man. That Nick, the Knicks had a great team, a tough physical team, but John Starks was the only guy on the Knicks team that would look Jordan in the face, go toe-to-toe with him, head up, and Jordan would get him because Jordan is the greatest athlete most of the time. But Starks would go toe-to-toe. I was so angry with Patrick Ewing and Charles Oakley because they were always playing that leadership role, that correcting Starks and getting on his case, and they should have been applauding Starks and getting Starks to do more because, you know, basketball is a team game, but it's an individual game too. You got to go toe to toe. You got to look at a guy in his face and say, man, I'm going to whoop you. I'm going to whoop you today. And Starks, Michael Jordan, as great as he was, he wasn't going to back Starks down. starts with the only Nick.
Well, there were some guys, Primo, let me, there were some guys that were certainly not scared of Michael Jordan, but they didn't have the ability. I mean, there was, like you're saying, John Starks could look at him in the eye and go out there and give him a run for his money occasionally, but that was what made Michael Michael, is that you might get him once, but you're not going to get him back to back to back and win a series against him. Once he figured out that, that formula, nobody got him.
Yeah. On the other guy. You remember when Starks went baseline and flushed him? He went baseline and
yes, and I remember that they lost that series.
Yeah. I mean, listen, John Starks had the, you know, the guts to kind of try to go toe-to-toe. Xavier McDaniels, when he came over, tried to go toe-to-toe. I believe Derek Harper tried to go toe-to-toe. The problem is, you don't win toe-to-toe battles with Michael Jordan.
Exactly.
You win schematic battles, but you can't win toe-to-toe battles.
That's cute to yeah, everybody has a good game here and there. What was the dude that had 37 Smith?
LeBradford Smith.
Man, come on, man. I mean, everybody has a good game every now and then, you know, and then you don't hear of him anymore. John Starks is cool, but stop. John Starks, yeah, he dunked on a dude and all that, and that's cool. That's cute. Starks wasn't like that, though. Let's not push him up like that against Jordan. It's just not – it's impossible. It's impossible.
The LeBradford Smith thing is a perfect example because he had a night. He got hot, and he made a bunch of shots, and he didn't say anything to Michael. But Michael created a scenario where it's like, okay, we're not going to ever, ever, ever let that happen again. So whether you're John Starks and you're pushing it, whether you're LeBradford Smith and just kind of letting it happen, he's not going to let you do it to him multiple times in a row. It's not in his nature. It just can't happen like that.
No, it's not. Especially like, you know, a guy on the level of John Starks or LeBradford Smith, you know, obviously fine NBA players. You got there. Anytime you can score 20 points in the NBA, you're doing all right in my book. But as far as I can turn, looking back, the only player, once Mike started winning championships, to me, the only perimeter player who gave no damn when he faced Michael Jordan was Reggie Miller. To me, Reggie Miller tried to go after MJ as much as he possibly could every single night, try to get buckets every single night, and never back down. Now, obviously, he wasn't the player that Michael Jordan was.
All good offensive players are going to get theirs, period. Whether it's Reggie Miller, whether it's Kobe Bryant, no matter who they are offensively, they're going to get theirs. That's just and defensively, you're not going to stop Michael Jordan. So it's going to be a trade-off. Jordan might score 33, but if he's guarding Reggie Miller going to get his 25. That's just what it's going to be. Certain guys in professional sports are going to get theirs regardless. It's just
But there are some guys, you know, like Clyde Drexler, where that's not true.
Clyde Drexler still got his. He may not. Clyde Drexler wasn't 4 of 29.
He was pretty bad, man. He was great.
But Clyde Drexler still got his. He gave up some. But he still got his.
Speaking of 4 of 29, let's talk about Michael's baseball career. Michael, it's interesting because it's kind of a double-edged sword, and I think that we need to be specific about this, that Michael Jordan came out of the NBA, hadn't played baseball since high school, and showed up in double-A baseball. And for those people that don't follow minor league baseball, which is everybody, double-A is where all the prospects are. They're not the best players at that time, but they're the best prospects. Those are the guys that you see that very often will jump directly to the major leagues. Triple A is kind of for guys that are in between major league caliber, but not quite prospects anymore. Double A is where all the prospects are. That you took Michael Jordan at 31 years old, who hadn't played baseball since high school, and that he drove in 51 runs and hit 200 is nothing short of a miracle. It is extraordinary. That is true, period, end of the sentence. What is also true is that this idea that Michael would have figured out a way to get to the Major League Baseball is just ridiculous. No, he would not have. He was 31 years old. He couldn't make contact with a curveball. His bat was slow, and he absolutely was nowhere near a Major League caliber player.
See, I'm not going to say that, though, Travis. He's already in Double-A having some mild success. He's picking the game up, learning the game, right? Now, everything that they were throwing at him, he was doing okay with. He struggled on the breaking ball or the curves or whatever it was at that time and period, to the point that he started taking BP 3 and 4 times a day so that he could get accustomed to those sort of things. The moment that we thought, oh, okay, well, it may be turning the corner, the strike was coming, and at that point in time, he decided to switch and go back to basketball. If in fact, he stayed the course, the story wasn't written. It wasn't over yet, so we don't know. What if he went to the majors and batted 225 and hit whatever, and been one of the top, not necessarily one of the top players there, but one of the guys at the end of the bench in the majors? I just don't want to say it'll never happen, because his competitive drive and his worth ethic pushed it to another level.
I think what you're saying,
you can't go from not picking up a baseball bat and hitting balls, though. Travis, think about it, man. Yeah. Think about this for a minute. From how long is that? From time he was 17?
14 years.
15 years, or 14, 15 years, to doing what he did. No. You can't do that. It's dudes that have been playing baseball their entire lives and never stopped to pick up another sport and couldn't do what he did in a short period of time. That's all I'm saying.
No, I want to be clear.
Let's not dismiss it.
I'm not dismissing it. What I'm saying is that I think all the things that you just said, Key, all the reasons that you just said, the fact that he went into the cage 5 times a day, the fact that he was willing to do all of that work and the blood, sweat, and tears, and we know that his work ethic is legendary. That's why he hit 202, is because he did all of those things. It's because he is a once-in-a-generation athlete who has just unbelievable hand-eye coordination and everything else. That he was able to do that is a miracle, but it was because of the work. It's not like he just showed up and all of a sudden hit 202. He had to grind it out to get to 202, which is, and again, it sounds weird, but it's an incredible accomplishment to hit 200 having not played baseball for 14 years. But that, I mean, I'm telling you, when those cuts come back on, watch his bat. Don't watch anything else other than his bat.
I understand his bat speed was slow. He missed the ball once upon a time by a foot. I saw it. You know, I saw it. I played enough baseball to have a little bit of an understanding, maybe not as much as you, so you have to educate me on some things from time to time. But I believe when athletes put their mind to something, and you finally get it, it clicks. We never saw the finished product. Now, maybe it wouldn't have happened till he was 39 years old or whatever the case is, but I'm not willing to say, oh, he couldn't have gone in the majors. He probably could have done that, because he's going up against somebody else. As we always like to say, that guy at the end of the bench is cool, but we might get that spot to Jordan because of this, and this makes a lot of sense for us.
Well, would he have made it to be a sideshow is different than would he have made it because he was one of the 25 best guys on the roster. That's different.
What if he was the 25th best guy on the roster, though? What if he was just number 25 and it was good enough?
There's no way that Michael Jordan was one of the 6 best outfielders in the Chicago White Sox organization. There's just no way.
You can't believe it, huh? You can't believe what Jerry Reinsdorf said, huh?
No, I believe that he worked his ass off to get to 200 in Double A.
Even though the owner said he believed that Michael would have made the majors roster if he'd have stayed with it, you can't believe that.
I believe that the owner has some skin in the game. That's what I believe. I believe that the owner has an invested interest in making sure that that is something that
I hope Michael Jordan listened to this right now and decided to go back to baseball.
What's up? Let's go. I'll go throw him some BP.
It takes is for somebody to be negative toward him.
That's true. He's probably in the cage right now. All right. Dak Prescott was given a little advice from a further Super Bowl winning quarterback. Should he take it? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
All right, take a little bit of a break from The Last Dance. I can't believe, guys, that we're already to the end of the line, that we got one more Sunday, episodes 9 and 10 coming up 6 o'clock. That went by fast, didn't it?
It did. It definitely did. But we're not going to take a quick break because I want to know, LZ was Googling it for us, how many times have Michael Jordan been on the front cover of Sports Illustrated opposed to some of the other great players in sports? Did you find that number yet?
So it's 50 for Jordan, 40 for Ali, and then LeBron at 25, Tiger at 24, Magic 23, Kareem 22, Brady 20.
So Jordan is number one then?
Yeah.
For some reason, I remember Muhammad Ali once upon a time had been on Sports Illustrated the most, but I could, 10 more and he's still with us, it makes a lot of sense.
I don't know if this is still true or not, but Brady, I do know that at one point there were only three people in the history of that magazine that had ever been on the cover in back-to-back weeks, and it was Ali, Jordan. And you guys want to take a guess at who the other guy was?
Jeremy Lin.
That's right. That Ali, Michael Jordan, and Jeremy Lin are the only three guys who'd be on that cover in back-to-back weeks.
Is it one
of these things is not like the other.
Is it still cool to be on the front cover of Sports Illustrated?
Yes.
I think it's still cool to be on any cover.
No, I don't. I'm asking you because you were in the print business and germ spreading business. So I just figured I ask you seriously, is it still? Because once upon a time growing up, it's like I can't wait to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
How many times were you on Key? I know I can think of three off the top of my head.
I think it's three. Let me see. Wait, Bucks, Jets,
NSC.
USC. Yeah, three. I think. Yeah, maybe three or four. I know it was so. It's. I did a whole with Walter Yotes, who's a photographer. We did a whole production. You know how these things go, LZ, because you was the editor over at ESPN, the magazine. Man, we put a whole thing together. They spent so much money to do this shoot.
Oh, I would have set you up right.
No, I was set up right. Now I didn't have a football field, but I had a gym. I had everything I needed to work out to do it. It was a 2-day shoot, and it was going to be on the cover. And they were at the press getting ready to printing copies up. They had started printing them, and then Walter Payton passed away. So they had to pull everything, stop it and put Walter on the cover. And then they wind up using all of our photos inside the magazine. But they spent so much time and we spent so much energy and stuff on it. So I think that was either going to be the 4th or 5th cover. But I wanted to be on it, growing up. It was like, man, I can't wait to get on the front cover of Sports Illustrated.
Of course. I mean, what it was incredible.
I didn't know if it was such a thing anymore because people don't really even buy magazines.
I don't think it has the impact that it had when we were kids, Key, but it's still a big deal. I mean, it's the cover of Sports Illustrated. It's not nothing.
No, right.
All right, so Joe Theismann has advice for Dak Prescott. Quote, Dak Prescott's situation confuses me a bit. If I were advising Dak Prescott, I'd say take the money. The aggravation to go through, the unknowns, if you happen to go through a year, the free agency. Yes, they've committed a lot of money to Omari. Yes, they've committed a lot of money to Zeke. But that's a lot of money. What are you looking for? Another couple of million? You're never going to see the last year of the contract anyway. He also went on to say, this is Joe Theismann again talking about Dak, you're not a top 5 quarterback in the National Football League. You're a good football player. You have the potential to be better. But what have you done? If you're Dak Prescott and you hear that from Joe Theismann, you're thinking what, Key?
I don't listen to Joe Theismann anyway. At times, he's an ass to me, so I can't listen to him. And that's real talk. Like, he's always trying to put some sizzle with it and say something off the cuff. Now you're telling the dude he ain't a top 5 quarterback and this, that, and the other. I'm so tired of every time something come up, he want to put his name out there so people can talk about him. Now, look, as far as taking the contract, I don't know what the deal is, okay? At the end of the day, you would like to think that it's such that he could at some point in time make a decision to do it because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Okay. With that being said, it has to be right. It ain't about I need a dollar more. It's about the structure of the deal. It's about protecting you and your family. What's the structure? It's not about, oh, I'm getting a million more now. No, it's not about that, because the money is what the money's going to be. It's the structure. When am I being paid? How am I being paid? Is it current currency? Is it pushed out over time? Like, what is it? That's the deal. They argue about, now all of a sudden he comes up and it's a problem to pay him. It's not based on paying a dude on the top five. It's my time. It's my, you pay Carson Wentz, hey, he wasn't the top five quarterback. You pay Jared Goff, he wasn't the top five quarterback. But when I come up, you want to try to say, oh, he's not a top five guy. You didn't say it about them. Why you didn't say it about them?
It's not.
But Kirk Cousins, Matt Stafford, who I did not want to sign, Raj, you may recall. I was so upset that we gave him that fat-ass contract because he hadn't done anything.
It was his
Carson
time.
Wentz.
Now.
These aren't top five quarterbacks. So it's like, why the top five quarterback is your barometer all of a sudden in reference to Dak Prescott? Now, again, you know, I don't make a habit out of listening to what Joe Theismann has to say. Like, much like Key, I find him to be inconsistent in his criticism of players. But this notion that you need to be a top five player in any position to make
Joe
top five money.
Joe likes to hear himself talk, man.
Is ridiculous.
No, that's real talk. Joe likes to hear himself talk.
Okay, put that aside for a second, or hold on to it, because Stephen Jones also said this on Pro Football Talk. There's all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big a percentage of your salary cap, that it decreases your chances to win. It just seems that every
okay,
like you
so
just
let
said,
me stop you. Let me stop you for
yeah.
a minute.
All right.
Repeat that one more time.
There's all sorts of analytics out there that show if your quarterback takes up too big of a percentage of your salary cap, that it decreases okay. your chances to win.
Salary cap is different than cash. Salary cap is different than cash. And Stephen Jones is correct as far as the cap goes. Doesn't say anything about cash. Cash is different than cap. And I always try to educate you guys on understanding that. And he's right about that. So it doesn't mean that he's not willing to give him the cash. He's not willing to give him the cap space. So based on the structure of the deal that they may be looking for, may be eating up more of the cap based on the type of structure on the cash side of things that they're looking to get. Does that make sense?
It does, but does this make sense? That like the quarterbacks that you just mentioned, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff, LZ just mentioned Kirk Cousins and Matt Stafford, these guys all got paid. Why is Dak Prescott having to fight like this together?
Because their deals may be cap friendly to their teams in the long run, opposed to what Dak Prescott and his agent is asking for may not be cap friendly, but cash friendly. The cash ain't a problem. The Jones family got cash running out of their ears. So cash isn't a problem. And you say, well, what's the difference, right? Well, there's only a certain number from a salary cap standpoint based on how you structure it, based on the proration, how long you go out. This is the cap. So when I want to go out, remember a couple of weeks ago, I don't know who it was that was on. Was it Dan Graziano or somebody was on with us, said that they wanted a longer deal, the Cowboys. That's to stretch the cap out.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say anything about cash. They wanted a 7-year deal, I think it was, where Dak wants a 4-year deal with the same cash that has cap ramifications. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So if you take the 4 years, and let's say, I don't know, man, do the math. 4 years, $100 million. That's $25 million a year in cap charge, opposed to 7 years, 8 years, it's pushing it all the way to the end. You're stretching that proration out. That's what they want to do. Dak Prescott says, no, I don't want to do that because I want to get back to the market in 4 years. They don't want to do it because they're saying you're going to cap strain us. When we want to sign some players 3 or 4 years from now, we're not going to have any cap room. Now we're going to have to come back to you, renegotiate, much like the Rams had to do with Jared Goff, to give you more cash up front to release some of that pressure on the cap, when in 3 to 4 years you're handcuffing us and you may not be that player. And now you're handcuffing us and making us give you a new deal in 3 to 4 years, opposed to letting the deal expire. That's all it is.
All right, Take It or Shake It is coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. All right, Key, let's start with this. We saw a UFC card this weekend, and it went off well. Because UFC was successful, we are one step closer to having team sports open up. Take It or Shake It.
I take it, I guess.
All right, let's go. Let's take it then. Yes. That's right. Yeah.
I mean, I didn't get a chance to dive into the UFC and watch it, but certainly when you have events that are live and people can sit there and enjoy it and it goes well without any glitches, you would think that it helps leagues that are trying to get back on course, which Major League Baseball is going to announce very soon their plan, the NBA to follow. NFL has released their schedule. So there's plans to do it, and they're going to do it in a certain way. This just gives them other ideas and see kind of what it could potentially look like.
You wonder if it's more important about what's going on in Asia and in Europe with team sports that are starting to open up. The Bundesliga is opening. We know that baseball is being played in Korea and Taiwan. Is that more indicative of team sports here? Are we talking UFC and some tennis matches here being more of an indicator?
I think it's more of what we're seeing here, because what everybody else is doing across the country, I don't think it really even factors in. It factors in, but not to a major degree where we're watching it so closely that we feel like we have to duplicate what they're doing overseas opposed to what we're seeing right here in front of us in the U.S.
All right, let's go on to this one. Gary Payton and the Sonics would have beaten the Bulls had George Karl put the glove on MJ earlier. Take it or shake it.
Shake it.
All right.
I think the Bulls was going to be the Bulls, and I think at some point Michael was going to will his way to victory. The glove certainly is matched up a certain type of way, because the glove is legit. Glove is a 9-time defensive player. I mean, first-team defensive player. That's something to be said. But like I said earlier, you're going to get yours and he's going to get his. The glove's still going to get his because the glove is great. When you great going up against great, you're going to get yours. Everybody going to get theirs. And when a great player shuts down another great player completely, that player wasn't great in the first place. They get shut down like that on a consistent basis. No, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I think that series would have been different if they had started off right off the bat. Because not only did Gary Payton was not on Jordan to slow him down, but Gary Payton's first three games not playing Jordan, he actually shot awful. So it felt like his offense was feeding off of his defense, and he actually started to play better.
You're another one of those, Jordan. I see you getting ready to make Jordan mad too.
What are you talking about? Listen, it's history. It's already played out.
Because when he did handle him in game five, or was it five or six? No, six.
Six.
When
six.
He handled him in six, the glove really, the glove had a hole in it.
Yeah, but if you go back to the beginning of the series, instead of waiting until you're down 3-0 to shoot your shot, why not take your best defender and put him on their best offensive player? I get it, Gary Payton is an offensive player too, but that seemed like a weird decision.
But it wouldn't have mattered though, Trav, because at the end of the day, So in other words, you was getting ready to sweep the Bulls?
No. What I'm saying is they waited until it was 3-0 Chicago before they said, all right, Gary, you go guard MJ.
I understand that. It was still five games. It went to 3-2.
Here's the difference, Key. In the first three games the Bulls won, Jordan was north of 30 points and shot about 50% from the field.
Okay.
When they put Gary Payton on him, he was shooting less than 40% and is getting about 23 points a game.
So in other words, you telling me they was gonna sweep him?
No, what I'm telling you is that maybe the series would have turned out differently. Maybe
it goes how to it was going? What was it gonna go to seven?
Maybe it would have gone to seven. Exactly.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
and maybe they grab one of those first couple of games at home too. You just never know. Well, I mean,
court advantage, right? I mean,
he did.
Yeah.
So it was going back to Chicago in the end anyway. It wasn't going to happen, man. I understand what you're saying. It wasn't going to happen. The outcome was going to be exactly what it was.
Let's go to the next one here.
Second.
Michael Jordan needed a break from the NBA in order to win the next three championships. Take it or shake it.
Take it.
Take it.
Moving away from the NBA allowed him to see things a little bit different and get some downtime, have some fun, live again, enjoy what it was that he was doing. Yes, the circus at times was still there covering baseball, but not nearly as significant as it was in basketball. The minor leagues didn't have 40,000 people in an arena or 28,000 in an arena with another 10 outside. It was different. There wasn't wherever he was at. What was it, Birmingham? In Birmingham, yeah. He's going to the diner, where in Chicago, he's got to go to a big-time restaurant where he couldn't do – look at Herm Hair – where he could do some stuff. And so it's different. So he felt a certain type of way where he in Birmingham – you in Birmingham, Alabama, man. Back then, think about it. What did they have, a Perkins or two?
Waffle House.
Yeah, so it's a little bit different than going
into – was there a golf tournament there, too?
It's different than going into the best steakhouse is in the world in Chicago. It's a little bit different, right? You can finally go and maybe sit down and have a waffle without 25 people asking you for an autograph opposed to two or three. It's a big difference.
What was interesting to me is to watch the footage of Michael in the minor leagues. It had nothing to do with whether or not he was getting hits or playing left field or whatever. You could tell he genuinely had affection for his teammates. And the difference in station in life is almost indescribable. You have Michael Jordan, arguably the most famous human being on the planet at that point, playing with a bunch of guys that are just out of high school and college. And yet you could tell they kind of bonded for what you're just to be able to go out and live and play. And it felt like the burden of being Michael Jordan was just so much. You know, I just need to get away from it and understand competition and enjoy competition again. You could tell that was real. That wasn't a put on. He liked those guys and they liked him.
Yeah, and I'm sure at the same time the guy.
What is going on with Herm's hair?
I was looking at you. He wants to show everybody he ain't social distancing himself.
Okay. He got good hair. He got that Indian hair.
Yeah. Travis, are you seeing this?
I am. I'm trying to figure out what it is I'm looking at exactly. It's pretty long because Herm has always been tight.
Yeah, he's tight right now.
Herm looks like he's straight out the 60s. But I think when you look at it, though, Mike liked the Bull players. He enjoyed being around those guys as well. He might have torched them because he wanted to win that championship where he knew he was in control. Well, in baseball, he needed the other guys to be in control to teach him how to win in baseball.
Absolutely. And that brings us to our next topic, which is the burden of winning that he had to carry around. He didn't have to do it in baseball, but you could see him get emotional during the episodes last night, just how much winning meant to him and what he needed to do to make sure he his teammates understood it as well. We'll get into that next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.